Hello and welcome to Taking Care of Business. I'm Jackie Mitchell. When you come across creativity that blows our mind, we refer to it as genius. How did Leonardo invent the helicopter? Or how did Einstein come up with the theory of relativity? Or how do they do special effects in a film? Are you born with creativity? Can you learn it? How do you unlock creativity in your brain? Why is it useful? These are all questions we are going to ask our expert panel today and try and get to the bottom of why creativity is important and how we can use it more effectively in our business and also in our day-to-day life and also to add to our general well-being. Today's show is made possible by our innovative friends at eView Real Estate. In recent years, scientists have grown more interested in understanding what's going on in the brain when people are engaged in creative activities such as playing a musical instrument or brainstorming. Modern neuroscience is now intersecting all aspects of our life as we begin to understand more about ourselves by understanding how our brain works. It makes perfect sense. So our first guest is Taking Care of Business resident neuroscience. I love the fact we have a resident neuroscience. Former Director of Brain and Psychological Sciences Research Centre at Swinburne University of Technology and Australian Chair of the Neuromarketing Science and Business Association, Professor Joseph Ciciari. Welcome back.
Good morning, Jackie. How are you?
Really well. I'm much better to see your happy face in the studio.
Back in Australia.
Yes. Now, you've been in Italy.
I spent some time in Rome. I was working at the Sapienza University, which is, in translation, University of the Knowing. I worked in the one of the faculties of medicine and psychology. One of the reasons why I was there is really to expand my own work, but at the same time, give me time to be creative. And that's something that as academics at universities, we don't necessarily get a lot of time to do that. So I was very fortunate to get a sabbatical.
So tell us a bit more about the work you were doing in Italy.
The work consisted of, my area of neuroscience has always been how people think, whether it's their personality, abnormalities in how they think. I started off looking at schizophrenia, for example, and other disorders. But I fast learned that we still don't know all the mechanisms associated with how normal functioning takes place. And so things like big questions like consciousness, creativity, individual differences, personality, these are the things I've been pursuing. But also decision making, why people make bad decisions and good decisions and why they are creative and so forth. So I've applied that to business and marketing, so neuromarketing. But while I was there, I actually learned a great deal from some individuals who are working in neuromarketing, and they actually have their own company called Brain Science. So it was actually quite useful to learn some new skills. So, you know, I'm an old dog, but I'm learning new tricks. And I've actually applied a lot of those new tricks to some neuromarketing studies we've just finished, and where publications are currently in place. One looking at how elderly people deal with energy messages, you know, how to conserve energy and so forth. We did some work with Illawarra Energy Company, and we're tailor-made the advertisements based on their reactions to make sure that they get the information, that it's actually getting in there somehow, working memory and so forth, and making a decision with this information. We've also looked at young people, how they deal with social media. And if you're trying to convince them of something, you know, something good in health, for example, social media doesn't necessarily work all the time. And so what we were able to do is actually work out why they worked and why they didn't work. Final study was actually looking at something called emotional intelligence and how that and personality impacts on your decision making. Mm. And people who have high emotional intelligence tend to like to deal with people. They like faces, they like looking at faces and so forth. People with low emotional intelligence don't. And we found from a neural point of view, there was a sort of an efficiency in processing associated with those who had the high skills in emotional intelligence. And they also go hand in hand with creativity as well. So there's some new studies. The other thing in terms of consciousness, I was looking at hypnosis, and we actually managed to come up with some new data which actually helped me answer a question I've had for the last 17 years about some disorders I've been looking at altered consciousness and personalities that some disorders where there are multiple personalities. So I've actually got some answers for that. So that's the big thing. That's what I did in 3 months while I was in Italy. So.
Oh, how fantastic. And what did you do to feed your creative elements? You're doing all this research. I think it's a really good point.
Just being completely immersed in academia and not having to worry about... My office was 5 minutes away from my apartment, walking distance, 5 minutes away from the Colosseum too. But nonetheless, I was immersed in this incredible culture. Mm. It was like, you know, when you go to a conference, for example, and you're there for 2 or 3 days and you're meeting some of the superstars in the area and you're listening to their talks and you're really getting excited about all this new information. Well, imagine that over 3 months. That's what it was like being immersed in all that. Nobel Prize winners would come to Rome, give talks. One of my heroes is Eric Kandel, who's a Nobel laureate in neuroscience. We had you know, some of the gurus associated with brain imaging. They're all there. So roads do lead to Rome. And on a regular basis, we were getting some of these incredible individuals, very creative individuals. So, yeah, it was very exciting.
Yeah, now, as far as creativity goes, I know that neuroscience, and it's an area that I am always a keen student of, and I wanted to talk to you about the impact of a positive mood or a relaxed state of mind to help, I suppose, encourage creative insight or flow, as they call it.
Exactly. Well, actually, I'm finishing off a study about to submit on flow, where we were able to use a device called TDCS, which is a stimulation device. We're able to get increased states of flow. This is where you're very creative, you're less distracted, and we've been trying to map out those mechanisms. I'm a mechanisms person, so I like to work out exactly where in the brain and how in the brain these things are happening. So, yeah, flow, creativity are incredible processes, and I think we're just starting to get an inkling about what's happening neurally. And it really comes down to how efficient the neural networks are and how they're interacting. Some people have a lot of difficulty organizing these neural networks, and so they don't have those skills. Some people just seem to be innate. They seem to be born with those skills. And I think genetics has a lot to do with it as well. And nature and nurture has a lot to do with it as well. So
it's interesting that triggers for flow, and I should actually state, flow, it's considered a psychological state. Is that correct?
It's a construct there are a number of psychological models associated with it. Yeah, but it basically it's got to do with enhanced way of thinking, whereby you're putting all your resources into that, you know, solving an issue or problem. But you're taking the resources from, you know, areas of the brain which normally are not involved in anything except, for example, visual processing or auditory processing. But you're getting all these other areas involved in helping you make those decisions.
Yeah, so it's characterised by, say, a high level of attention but a low sense of effort.
Yeah, exactly.
Flow. So
it's effortless.
Going with the flow.
Yeah, it's effortless and it's fast. That's the thing. So those people who are very creative can get into a state of flow very, very quickly. It's almost like a meditative phase, meditative state. And I find that really exciting, you know, from a neural point of view in terms of the mechanisms. And if you can actually stimulate these systems, and this is why we're doing some experiments with TDCS, this is transcranial direct current stimulation. It doesn't hurt. It's not dangerous. And it's not like ECT, you know, electroconvulsive therapy. As a matter of fact, gamers around the world have been downloading and buying these systems for years so to speed up their you know, reaction times while they're playing computer games. Mm. So we've been doing the science behind that. So.
And creativity is also not a right brain function. So this is a bit of pop psychology that we actually tend to divide our two hemispheres, our left and right hemisphere, into right and left brain thinking. Yeah. But that's actually been proven wrong. It's a whole brain function.
That's a very 60s way of thinking.
Right,
and the way the brain is functioning, how we're learning about it, is that we're finding that it's about networks. It's about efficiencies of these networks. It's not necessarily how much grey matter you have, but how well you process the information, how quickly it gets around the brain.
Interesting. So. The other bit about creative thinking and creative thought and how we can encourage ourselves to be creative and also really good to use for problem solving as well is the relationship with sleep.
Oh, sleep is vital. It's absolutely vital.
So how can we use sleep to help us think more creatively?
Well, in terms of learning, there have been plenty of experiments that have shown that if you have a list of words, for example, that you have to remember or some item you have to remember, just think about them before going to bed, as in having them there on the bedside table. That would be your last thought. And go to sleep, have a good night's sleep. And it's important to have a good night's sleep because a lot of that information gets processed, it's put into working memory, but this is the unconscious working memory systems that we have. And as a matter of fact, some of the information that you've learned during the day is then put into long-term store as well, which seems to be unlimited.
Is that dream incubation? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
So you're actually making yourself, or you're putting a thought in your head or a problem or an issue.
Yeah.
And almost...
And it's solved in the morning.
Okay, forcing yourself to do it. That's incredible. The other bit of research that
I've... Takes practice, though.
Does it?
Yeah.
Oh, how long?
Some studies have showed that it could take some people a matter of days, some people a matter of weeks, depending on a number of factors, but generally how well their brain is able to change. So we refer to this whole process called neural plasticity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The other bit of information that I find particularly useful with some research coming out now is the shower. Having a shower is where an enormous amount of creative activity happens in your brain. And they've put it down to there's not many distractions. You're not on your phone. And they've had all this research and data that the shower has been the place for creative thinking. Has it got something to do also with the water and the link to meditation? Because that's another area.
I think that is an opportunity to disconnect from the world, disconnect from all this different stimuli that you have to process. And at the same time, the water running is like white noise. And you do get into a meditative state. But I haven't seen many good studies about that. But it's actually... And from an anecdotal point of view, it's actually quite real.
Fascinating stuff. Mm. How did you start into neuroscience? Like, did you want to be a neuroscience when you were at school?
No, I wanted to be a doctor, as in a medical doctor. Mm. But then I went to a lecture at Melbourne Uni. There was and you're always influenced by some of the great speakers.
Yeah.
He was talking about how the brain works and how it doesn't work in some cases. And he was talking about disorders and schizophrenia, depression and anxiety disorders and so forth. And I thought, this is fascinating. Who in Melbourne is doing these various programs? And actually, I've been at Swinburne since I was an undergrad, so that's where I started.
Mm. Fantastic. Well, the field is happy that you're in there.
Oh, thanks, Jill.
Love having you in the studio. It's always a fascinating discussion. When we come back from this break, we have two more incredibly creative brain power. It's the hour of brain power today. Two guests, Danielle Story and Toby Travenar, they've been regulars on, and they are in the creative space. They're very innovative, and we're going to have a chat with them. And then we have a surprise guest at 11:30, but I'm not going to reveal that until a little bit later on. You're listening to Taking Care of Business exclusively here on Adult PFM. Thank you for listening. You're on Adult PFM, and we talk about the driving force in business at the moment. The brain, your brain, and your customer's brain. And I've got here our resident neuroscientist, Professor Joseph Ciciari. And that song, of course, Joseph, was Take On Me. Do you know who sung it, just off the top of your head?
No. Sorry.
Aha. So I had to pick that because we're talking about aha moments in creativity.
Moment. Yes. Of course.
So that was my creative input into the music selection. Our next guest is a creative facilitator. He's a speaker, MC, and founder of The Learning Company and great friend of the program, Toby Travenar. Hello.
I knew that song, Jackie. I knew who sang it. That's sad, really, because it means that I did all my music... I suppose, foundation in the 80s.
Yeah, well, I reckon it was the best period. Yeah, we're all getting thumbs up here.
Now, shoulder pads and, zoot pants.
Yeah.
The fashion was fantastic.
Lots of hairspray, which, I don't know, did you used to wear hairspray?
I had a perm.
Oh, no.
I had the whole flock of seagulls perm at one stage.
Did you have a mullet?
No,
okay.
I never went. I was more kind of Spandau Ballet.
Oh.
Yeah, tragic, I know.
Did you have a puffy shirt?
Yeah, I did. I had a pirate shirt.
Now, moving on.
Now that my credibility is completely shot.
You're completely shot. But talking about creativity, how do you use creativity in what you do? So you spend a lot of time on stage.
Yeah. Look, it's not just on stage as well. It's helping organisations to understand that creativity is okay And nowadays, when so many businesses are doing the same thing, right? They all offer the same sort of services. Sometimes it comes down to how I present myself in a creative manner, or how I'm describing my service or my offering in a slightly more creative manner, or even just the way we organize the way the office or the business runs in a slightly more creative manner can make that differentiation so that the right customer goes, yeah, I want to do business with you. And a lot of the time, creativity is just about, I know this sounds simplistic, but having a go and trusting yourself that it's going to be okay. And I think Joe mentioned also about this understanding of the flow. And a lot of the time, once you're in the flow, you get a feeling using your gut that what you're doing is going to be fine, even if it doesn't tick all of the corporate, this is what we're meant to be doing boxes. And I think a lot of organisations who, I suppose, have the courage to try something different actually reap some benefits from that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But having said that, though, it's okay to stuff up.
Do you have any routines or triggers for how you use creativity? So do you use it for problem solving? I would imagine you would.
I do. And we actually use it for running facilitation sessions for business development or strategic planning. It's quite interesting. There was a guy I read, an author I read many years ago, and I don't know if our other guests are familiar with Roger von Erck. And he wrote a couple of books. One was called A Whack in the Side of the Head. And the one was called A Kick in the Seat of the Pants.
Yeah.
And surprisingly simple creativity model based upon four roles that people can play. And he talks about being an explorer to start off with. In other words, what's the lay of the land? Mm. What's the problem? What are the issues? What have we got? The next role is artist, which is let's create some stuff. Let's not be bound by convention. Let's understand what we're trying to solve and just make stuff up. Use what's available and start creating. And that stops us from constraining too quickly, because that's the next role, which is judge. Mm. Once we've come up with ideas, which are the ones that are going to actually fly? And once you've decided, having the fire in the belly and the lion in the heart to actually play the role of warrior, which is go out and do it. And it's surprising how if you apply those very simple role types, people get it. And they're less likely to start... I'm mixing models now, but what was the guy's name? Oh, I'm having a mental blank. The creativity guy from the 80s. He talked about black hat thinking.
De Bono.
De Bono, yeah. There we go. Edward De Bono.
I was going to say, and anyone that's got a Van, Von, or a D.
Yeah, there you go.
You could be Toby Van Travener.
Or De Travener.
De Travener. I always think if you put that, I think that's a Seinfeld episode, actually. It is funny.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. Edward
De Bono.
It basically stops black hat thinking using his model early.
Which is negative.
And you get some fantastic outcomes out of it.
Australia's primed to be the place where innovators, entrepreneurs and leaders will thrive and create the success stories of the future. It's a place where collaboration will form the foundation of success. They are the words of our next guest. Our third guest today is a speaker, author and out-of-the-box thinker, and is currently CEO of Eastern Innovation Business Centre. Danielle Storey, hello.
Hello, it's so great to be back again. Thank you.
I love having you in the studio. What's the difference between innovation and creativity in your opinion?
I believe that creativity creates innovation, and I believe innovation is a result that makes the world a better place. I know that's really corny.
No, that makes sense. And
creativity is a part of having an innovation come to life. So let's consider, you know, I really loved what Professor Joe was talking about with flow. I want to think about a business that brings an innovative model or brings an innovative solution to their clients or to the world in general. A lot of businesses have got a lot of really great ideas, and we need what Toby does. We need people who are going to create safe spaces for creativity. But if you really want to be innovative and bring something, you actually need a series of processes that bring it to life. Mm. And what Professor Joe said about being in flow, and forgive me because I am not a neuroscience specialist, you said something about neurotransmitters firing and the way that some people are in flow more often because those transmitters flow in a much more efficient manner. If you've got a business or you've got an innovative idea or you're in a corporate and you're trying to bring something new to market, it's the lack of fire and it's the places where people get stuck or where projects stall that causes a stall in innovation. And in anything in running a business, great systems and knowing where to go, how to solve your problems and how to get back into flow is really important. So I see creativity as a major part of innovation, but I work with amazing businesses all day long. My greatest gift is the greatest gift given to me is the ability to work with these people who are continuously creative, trying to solve those problems that stop their flow.
Do they have something in common? Like, because you're dealing with so many people, so from a collective perspective, are they all eccentric? Are they all, you know, a certain age, a certain gender, a certain personality style? Is there some common thread?
The common thread is the ability to collaborate. So I see a big difference in over 40-year-old business owners, and I'm really generalising here because it's amazing creative, innovative over 40s, and younger founders of businesses. Founders are keen to collaborate. They know their strengths and weaknesses, and they know when they're holding a project up and they need to bring in a team member and do something. Whereas a traditional lifestyle business owner wants to own it and run it and wear all the hats and get worn out and not sleep very well and not be in flow as often. And I mean, I've been on both sides. So I see that ability to want to collaborate, that clarity of knowing where I need to get help is what keeps people in flow. Toby?
It's interesting, Danielle. It's about recognising those sorts of behaviours in individuals as well. I see a lot of the case where you have the wonderful environment of being able to work with organisations who think this way. I come across a lot of organisations where there are individuals who are like that, but their owners are constraining them. I had one, we ran a session for one group and we brought the CEO in, and his answer, I'll tidy it up as best as I can. He had this snarling look on his face. He goes, oh, that's well and good. You can try out any of these ideas, but if you fail, he used another phrase, I'll just say the euphemism there is stuff it up. If you fail, I will kick your backside as far as I can do so. And those guys are never going to do anything. They're never going to try. And I think we need to foster this whole idea. If you're going to be creative and innovative, you're going to make mistakes sometimes. But the whole idea is to take that mistake, learn from it, and do something else.
And be able to pivot. I know I did some work with the Australian Marketing Institute last year in their future prediction series. And one of the things two things they predicted is going to be massive for marketers. The world is always going to need marketers because of their creativity and human connection. But the ability to pivot, marketers need to have that ability to assess, where am I being held back? Where are my neurotransmitters not firing? Where are we not in flow? And data, what's the data to support that? And therefore, where do we pivot to? And anybody in marketing is in a really great space in the next 10 years.
I've read something interesting. Sorry, Joseph, just quickly. They called about the sweet spot. We talked about finding the flow. And this was a stat that I want to run by you because it's always interesting. Because every day there's something new coming out, particularly in the field of neuroscience. But the sweet spot, which is where you find your flow, is the midpoint between anxiety and boredom. And is to challenge yourself by 4% greater than your current skill level. Have you heard that before?
Yeah, I have heard it. Yeah.
And is it true?
To a certain extent, yes. There have been some good scientific studies that have shown that. They've investigated flow. They've found exactly that, yeah.
But there's been some varying views. Some believe that the prefrontal cortex, which is the sort of decision-making, rational part at the front of your brain, switches off completely. Where others say that it's an interaction between positive emotions and high focus. So mood is an incredible contributor to
flow. Absolutely. It's not, you know, this area turns off, or this area gets activated. It's more like a very efficient, balanced, think of a symphony. You know, they're all working together and they're producing something beautiful. You know, they've all got the guidelines, they've got the music sheets. But if they're out of whack or someone's doing something else, not following the instructions, it sounds terrible. Well, the brain can do that. When you get into a state of flow, everything is balanced and it's working very well. And it's efficient. And we know that from neuroimaging studies. We see that. So.
I'm glad you mentioned symphony, because I thought today's discussion wouldn't be complete without speaking to an artist. And when we come back from this break, we are going to speak to an artist that was the most famous pop star in the world in the 70s. He's the lead singer of the Bay City Rollers, Les McKeown. We're going to talk to him a little bit about creativity. On the other side of this break, you're listening to Taking Care of Business. Welcome back. In the 60s, there was Beatlemania, and in the 70s were owned by Rollermania. That, of course, was the legendary Bay City Rollers, and they sold over 300 million records. Let's just put that in perspective for a minute. That was pre-downloads. And they're currently on a sellout tour around Australia. The lead singer, Les McEwan, joins us. Good morning.
Good morning to you and all your listeners. Thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, you have been having a ball. I've been following a little bit on Facebook, and your reviews have been fantastic. Have you been surprised by the reaction from Australian fans?
Pleasantly surprised. I mean, it has been a long time. Australian fans have been asking me to come here for like 10 years after I came here on the Countdown Spectacular tour in 2007. So I thought I'd bring my legendary band to Australia, and it's all going fantastic.
Well, it is. It is.
For a better trip to Australia.
Well, I actually managed to sneak into one of your shows, of course, in preparation for today, and we had an absolute ball. Yes, it was wonderful, and your voice is really good. How do you manage to maintain the quality of your voice? You know, we hear about people like Adele who's having problems with their voice. How do you maintain it?
The only thing that affects my voice is, which I found out to my peril, is hard liquor. Mm. Away from that, my voice is good.
Okay, well, that's a good health advice all round. Now, as an artist and musician, how do you get creative inspiration? Because you write a lot of your own songs. Do you play a musical instrument as well?
You can find inspiration everywhere in the smallest of things, you know, even just like small and other ideas. There's this little chap here at the airport doing something like kind of karate kicks, and I said, hey, that's good, that'll stop people bullying you at school. And he's gone, yeah, I can do this and I can do that. So you get lots of inspiration from different sources. You know, that can inspire you to write maybe another song about Kung Fu fighting. but right now I'm concentrating on the old songs that I composed when I was like 19, 20. I've got this producer in Scotland called John McLaughlin, and we're looking at the old tapes that I've got from my early days as a composer. When I was in the Bay City Rollers, we were touring places like Australia. I was writing songs hoping maybe I could get one or two songs on a Bay City Roll album, but all the other forces around us that didn't want that to happen. So they kind of like languished in a little tape recorder in an old abandoned suitcase in my attic for 40 years. So I rediscovered them, and we've been rewriting them, kind of thing, but keeping the essence of the song, if you know what I mean. I wrote one in Australia, I think, called Boomerang, would you think?
Yeah. and it keeps really coming back.
So, I mean, yeah, exactly. If anybody wants to listen to any of that stuff, they could go to something like iTunes and you can get a big long preview of the tracks. It's called The Lost Songs by Les McEwan. If you want to go and listen to that, and if you like it, please click play.
Actually, Les, it's called The Lost Tapes, and we are going to play your song Beautiful at the end of this interview. So it's actually going to be on Australian radio.
Oh, that's cool. That's the one that I'm doing live.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
and
I'm doing that live on this tour.
It's a really nice song, and it's got that real roller sound. How would you describe the sound, that real Bay City Rollers sound? How would you describe it?
It's roller-tastic. I don't know. It all really comes from my favourite song, which is Chang-a-Lang. That's the first kind of thing. But even Remember, the first single that I had with the Bay City Rollers has got the roller-esque type of sound. It's a very unique sound, and I really like that. It changed, of course, as we progressed with Bye Bye Baby and things like that. It lost that kind of roller kind of feel about it. But Bye Bye Baby was still a huge selling song with the harmonies and all that stuff. So we keep the harmonies, keep the essence of the roller sound if we can in the song. So I wanted it to reflect at the time when I composed the song, if you know what I mean. I wanted it to reflect back in the day when I wrote the songs to the person. I wanted to reflect that kind of flavour. So I hope I captured that.
Yeah, well, I certainly think you have. Now, talking about creativity, when you're on stage, you've been performing for a very long time, since a teenager. So how do you creatively rev up a quiet audience? So if you've got an audience that is a bit slow to start sort of dancing or singing, what are some of the tips or tricks that you use to rev them up?
Sorry, you just broke up there just a little bit. Could you finish that last
sentence? Yeah, sure. Sorry about that. How do you creatively rev up an audience? So if the audience is a bit quiet, how do you get them up and dancing and really get them into the show?
I don't know. I just, you know, I don't think about it too much. I just go on stage and be myself, and if they're a bit quiet, I just make them a bit louder. I've been doing it since I was 15 years old, so it gets a natural thing. I don't try and put anything off on or something. I just try and connect with the audience, which is the best way to do it in a natural way. And, you know, the audience, in general, they want you to be good. Of course they do. They just take good money to come and see an act, and they want you to be good. They wish you to be good. You know, they want me to enable them to let go a little bit and, you know, enjoy more, lose your inhibition, freak out a little bit, you know, just for a couple of hours.
Yeah, it certainly does that. Now, when I mentioned in the introduction that you sold all those records pre-download, it was also pre-social media. So you seem to have embraced social media. Tell us a bit how you're using that now.
I just go on and post things. nobody else runs my Facebook or my Twitter feed. I just do it myself because I think that's a little bit fake when you've got people doing that. So I just go on and say, hey, morning, looking a bit rough, I know, but I just want to thank you about last night or something like that. Those little things, and I think people appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I think they do.
Lots of comments.
You do get lots of comments. Do you still get fan mail? Do people still write fan mail and mail it to you?
Yeah, very, very rarely you get an actual handwritten letter backstage. Especially when I'm on tour in the UK, when you go to the next theatre, there's a whole bundle of letters that are handwritten, nice little pictures drawn and that. And it's really nice to take a trip back to those days when people used to write to you and take the time, you know, really nice writing. Some people really bad writing.
Now, there are always two elements to show business, the show and the business side of it. And what do you look for now in a tour manager? Because you had some bad luck in the early days with the Bay City Rollers from a bit of a dodgy manager. And so now I suppose you've learned a lot of lessons. What do you look for now?
That's an understatement.
Yeah, well, it is.
Right now, if I'm not touring in Australia, this time I'm with a really good company called Metropolis Touring. They have been the best I've had in the last 20 years. Absolutely, totally professional. Most of the time, I do all the work. I book the hotels, I book the travel, I book the PA system, I book all the musicians, I book all the... Every little detail is covered. The route that we're taking, all that kind of stuff, I make sure that it's exactly the way I want it. It's not because I'm a control freak, it's just that it gives me a sense of satisfaction to do it the right way.
So what makes them so good?
Away from the pub.
What makes them so good? Are they looking after you well?
It's just a professional answer, yeah. Everything's sorted, you know, you've got your day sheets underneath. You know, in your hotel room when you arrive there, there's no hassle at all. It's all just looked after, totally professional, and it's a great company, and they've been really good to us. They've paid everything when they should pay it. That's no problem.
Well,
I'd recommend them to any artist listening to this radio show.
Yeah, well, it's always nice to hear because you hear so many bad stories. So it's nice to hear a good story about that. Are you writing any songs at the moment? Are you getting inspired by your tour down under?
I have got lots of little ideas and stuff like that. But I'll get you finished then when I get back because I'm having some little problems sleeping and stuff. I feel really tired at like about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then I wake up again just before showtime. I then can't get to sleep till like 5 o'clock in the morning, that kind of stuff. But I'm getting enough sleep, but things are good. Voice is good. Health is good. Everybody's enjoying it.
Yeah, and all the shows are sold out. We wish you well for the rest of your tour, Les McEwen, and we hope you do manage to get some sleep and take good care of that beautiful voice of yours. We'll put a link to our Facebook page for details of the rest of your tour. But here is your latest single. Would you like to introduce it for us?
Hello, everybody. This is Les McEwen from the Bay State Rose. This is my new single from the album The Lost Song. It's called Beautiful.
Welcome back to Taking Care of Business. If you've just joined us, we are talking about creativity and finding that aha moment. And I have in the studio with us today our resident neuroscience, Dr. Joseph Cicciari. I have the wonderful Danielle Story from the Eastern Innovation Business Centre and the creative facilitator himself, Toby Travenar. And we just chatted with Les McEwen from the Bay City Rollers, which I loved. He just sent a message saying he enjoyed it and thank you. He was really generous with his insights. And I was conscious of asking him questions that haven't been, you know, asked 1,000,000,000 times before, particularly on his recent tour. But I was interested in his creative process. And I found that his last comment about not having any sleep was of interest. So as you were saying, Joseph,
that's exactly what I was saying. Yeah, sleep is the quiet time that the brain has to learn, to change, grow, shape itself. You know, get rid of the things that are not important and that refine and make the systems efficient.
It's so important. But the other thing too, and Toby Travenar, you were having a laugh about the kung fu fighting thing. That about where you get creative inspiration, it's just looking around you, isn't it? Sort of getting outside yourself and having a look what's going on around you.
People are using the term mindfulness, but I think it's also just recognising the stuff that's around you, and it might create that moment where you can take something in and do something about it. We see it all the time, and a lot of the time it's a completely different industry that you can take an idea from or somebody having a chat to. And I'm a great believer in if you've got an opportunity to go to any sort of networking events, find somebody who's not doing what you're doing and have a chat with them.
Can I ask a question of you, Professor Joe, on that very point about creativity? There's a lot of research being done on curiosity and how when you get curious about something outside of what you're doing, another industry or outside, that the brain learns better and then gets into flow. Is that true?
Well, absolutely. There's been studies that have shown that, yeah. So we use that approach for disorders as well. So you talked about mindfulness. It's a psychological construct and it's a treatment. And that has been very, very useful. So, for example, in OCD, learning how to distract someone who's obsessed about something, that's part of the therapy. That's been quite useful. So looking at healthy brains, yeah, great, but also looking at brains that need a bit of work.
The other area for creative insight and to, I suppose, increase mental swiftness, it can be induced by RAT tests, which are remote associates tests. Do you use those, Professor Joseph?
No, I haven't, but I'm familiar with it.
So I come across a lot of rats in work.
These are imaging studies that show what part of the brain are in action. So it's a reduction of visual input. So you know how people close their eyes to think. There's a reason for that because, again, research has shown that if there's too many visual distractions, it will hinder your opportunity for creative insight. But
some people are really good at that, as in they can just switch off systems and focus. You know, they get into a sort of a meditative phase, and they tend to be people with a higher intellect, a higher emotional intelligence, better managers, so forth.
Yeah. Toby's dusting himself off. Hey, I've actually got a creative test for the three of you, and this is unannounced. I haven't mentioned this. Okay, and it's a RAT test. So this is just to show listeners or demonstrate to listeners how you can use RAT tests to help sort of, I suppose, unlock the creative part of your brain. So I'm going to say three words, and I want you to come up with the common word that fits with all the three. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the three words is dream, break, and light. What's the one word that's common to all those three? Go.
Day.
Danielle. Woohoo. Well done. Okay, one more.
I did think of dance.
Dream dance, break dance, live dance.
I'm still back in the 80s.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I can see that. And the other one, the last one, is same process. Health takes and less. And the common word would be, we've got health takes and less. See, it's interesting because you're not actually seeing it written down. That could have an impact. Not to be boring radio, the answer is care. Oh, you almost had it, Danielle. Health care.
I was going to say that, but care takes and care less. Yep.
And it's interesting, Professor Joseph, that obviously that's been, you've had to imagine those words in your head. And that would work differently for different people,
no? Some people see the words. Some people see the visual representations of each. So when you said health,
yeah.
I automatically thought of a hospital. Oh. And I was looking at nursing care.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Whereas I thought of the word and I was trying to visualise the word that matched was the physical letters.
Mm. And I suppose what was going through my head as well is if we're talking about creativity today, if we're looking for a word that matches with each of those, we're actually falling into the trap, in my opinion, of doing the norm.
Mm.
Whereas you could actually go, what's something that's so outrageous that still matches the three that isn't normal?
Mm.
And maybe playing around with that. Now, that iterative process might take a little while longer, but I reckon if we tried, we could probably come up with another word that's just out there that would still work with the other three.
Possibly. But I think the rat tested, for me, it was a good example of if you're stuck, you know, and you've got what they call the writer's block is one where you're stuck and you can't think creatively and you're frustrated, is to go and do something completely different. So do a rat test. And I know, Professor Joseph, we were talking about going and doing something completely different and how that can be another tip, I suppose, to
absolutely. Like,
help.
Learning music, for example, or playing an instrument or doing life drawing. I did that for a little while and I found that it's actually quite relaxing and I was very creative. I came up with some of my best ideas while I was doing some life drawing.
So. Joe, we talk about this from a business and an adult viewpoint, but how important are these types of activities for children?
Oh, absolutely important. There's been plenty of neurodevelopmental studies that have shown that having those forms of activities and stimuli are very, very important for the developing brain. And the brain develops faster, it becomes more skilled, more efficient, and problem-solving skills improve quite dramatically as well. So one thing that happens with developing children is that, the frontal lobes haven't fully integrated with the rest of the brain. It just takes a bit of a process before that gets to that phase. But this helps. This actually helps with that.
And I like to just then bring that back to running a business or owning an innovative venture or doing something, a new creative pursuit that you're beginning out on. It's important to recognise that it hasn't all lined up yet and that we're not completely in flow, and we can use a lot of the lessons from neuroscience in creating opportunities to find better answers and better ways of doing things.
Yeah.
And that then improves the opportunity for success, and then when you're successful you can share that with other people, and then and then it becomes this flow-on effect.
And I think the news is spreading from what you're saying as well. Although I gave an example of some CEOs and some senior managers who are still stuck, as we spoke about, I think more and more people are going, if you present them with something that's almost an outrageous idea, they'll go, hang on a sec, that might work.
Mm.
And they're being more open to this. Mm. And more I'm finding that by presenting something that's so outrageous that you'd think it'll never fly, they go, yeah, let's do it. And that's great.
And it's fun, because I think life is meant to be fun.
Absolutely.
If we were to leave everyone with one tip to get more creative, Professor Joseph Tachari, what
would
you say?
Do some rat tests before going to sleep. And having a good night's sleep.
Having a good night's sleep. It's all about sleep. Danielle Story, what would your one tip be?
Find some people that you flow well with and start some really out there engaging conversations about what might be possible.
Okay, that's good. Toby Trevenar.
If you come up with an idea, do it. Right? Just do it. Give it a go and see what happens, because that may not be the right one, but it'll lead to another, which leads to another, which leads to another.
Mine would be to talk to outsiders for a novel perspective. Talk to someone that you don't normally would never, ever, ever, ever be interested in talking to.
Get curious.
Might be surprised. Get curious. I think that's really good. Professor Joseph Tachari, thank you once again for
coming into
the show.
My pleasure.
Look forward to our next neural encounter.
My pleasure.
I love having the best brains in the business hanging around, soaring with eagles, not turkeys. Danielle Story, Thank you very much for coming in. Now,
such a delight.
Tell us a little, just a quick thing, Eastern
Innovation
Business Centre. People want more information?
It's in the middle of Melbourne, eibc.net.au, where we help businesses accelerate, innovations accelerates, and the professional services that support them. It's an amazing space to be in.
Oh, I must come down and have a look.
I think we should run a program there. Let's organise it. Yeah. Come up and do a live broadcast.
Okay, and I believe you've got a coffee machine called George, which is pretty awesome.
I have an amazing coffee machine called George.
Yeah, I will share. I want to come coffee. And meet George. Toby Travener, always good to have you in the studio.
Always a pleasure. I came across an FPOS machine called Attila the other day. It was written down on the FPOS machine. I said, why is it called Attila? And she said, well, the other one's called Ralph, and we call this one Attila because it lives near the till. There you go.
Oh.
At least they know.
Well, that's a good way to finish off the show. We hope you've enjoyed eavesdropping on this fascinating conversation today as we talk about finding your aha moment and getting more creative and unlocking the parts of your brain that will help you do that. We look forward to your company next Friday, 11 a.m. In the meantime, keep taking care of your brain and your business.